Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 7. I think it's episode 7.
Probably.
And today's show, we're kind of doing a subject very close to our own hearts.
Yes.
And I actually wrote a book about this, but it's actually Tom's experience. It's called The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist.
Yeah, that was Jenny's first book on paranormal nonfiction.
Yeah, and this was kind of interesting how this came about. For those of you who know, I'm primarily a horror writer, have been for many years, and hadn't really thought about writing anything in the paranormal line. But then probably not too long after me and you got together, and you told me about this experience you had in 1982.
Yeah, it wasn't just me. It was me, my aunt, my uncle, and my cousin.
Yeah. So
it was my extended family.
And he kind of told me all the details, and I talked to his aunt and uncle about it. You know, they had also seen it. And even though at that point I was a complete and total, like, paranormal skeptic of all things paranormal, I just thought it was all bullshit. But I found the story so interesting and so creepy that I was like, man, we should do a book about that. I think that would be good because it was just such a cool story. And you don't really see a lot of, like a lot of nonfiction paranormal ones, books that aren't like bullshitty or aren't like exaggerated, because that was something I didn't really want to do.
Yeah, we didn't want to do the Hollywood touch and turn it into something like, what was that one that they did? What's the one they made the movie about? Amityville Horror.
Yeah.
Which wasn't even really based on a real case. We didn't want anything like that. Jenny asked me if she could do the book, and I said, yeah, but let's do it as a paranormal nonfiction. And I want it to just be a reconstruction of what happened. You know, there's no real, what's a good word? We didn't Hollywoodize it at all.
Yeah. I mean, basically, we just kept it to what you guys saw.
Right.
And I have to say that, you know, I first heard the story from you, obviously, but I also called your aunt and uncle in California, who had also been there, and I talked to them, and they, without, like, independently of you,
right,
they told me the same. See, yeah, we saw this and this and this. So, well, you know, we so all we went have
through
their...
it. We all went through it together, and
right.
Man, it was something else. It changed my life. I mean, you know, I kind of count myself lucky to have experienced what people would call the paranormal, because otherwise I would have never believed it. But this is just a straight account of what happened.
Yeah.
And it was just what happened there was weird and it was undeniable. And I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. It started at this ski lodge in Mammoth Mountain. But it continued at my aunt's house, and it lasted for about 2 weeks. And I don't want to spoil everything about it.
But we'll just kind of go into some of the highlights. I mean, you know.
Right. But if you like the paranormal and you like poltergeist, and this is poltergeist not in the sense of ghost, which there's a difference, and we can get into that later. It did not. Usually when someone says a haunting, that what they're describing is something that involved, you know, ghosts, you know, spirits of the dead. There's usually apparitions, but very rarely is anything moving. This is poltergeist. What we saw was poltergeist, which was objects moving, but no manifestations of any humanoid forms or anything like that. It was classic poltergeist, which... I don't know, when poltergeist accounts go way back.
Yeah, that's true, they do.
Yeah, they're almost as old as ghost accounts. Yeah. But there is a difference between the two, which we get into that in the book.
Yeah.
So how do you want to proceed? Another thing is that we have photographs of the place today, you know, of what it looks like today. It is for sale. We're not going to give you the address, of course. We don't want you bothering these people.
I changed it in the book too. So if you think you're going to read the book and be like, oh, I'm going to find that place. Yeah. I changed the name of the lodge. I changed the number of the thing because, you know.
Only a few parapsychologists that we've dealt with know the actual address. You know, it's, of course, it's in Mammoth Lakes. It's in Mammoth Mountain, California.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of ski lodges up there.
Yeah.
And a lot of them look alike.
And honestly, I mean, really, and we'll kind of get into this too, but the location doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter in this case.
Because in this particular case, it didn't have anything to do with that particular place. I mean, you guys didn't live there. You were just there on vacation. And when you left,
it followed us.
It followed.
Or the effect followed us.
Yeah.
If that's what, you know.
So, I don't know.
It was not a location-based phenomenon.
Yeah.
Like a haunting would have been.
But I'm sure that won't dissuade people from going and trying to find it anyway. But I'm telling you that the location was not relevant.
No. It's only relative to the story when you read the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have photographs of it that we took from the time that it happened, and they're in the book.
Yeah.
But these are new photographs of the place because it's up for sale.
And it's been, it's been remodeled.
It's been remodeled.
It doesn't look exactly the same as it did in 1982.
No, it doesn't look alike. But you can tell. It looks like they relocated a few doors.
Yeah.
But this is the place.
Yeah.
What would be a good way to start telling about Mammoth? One thing we have to say is that the reason why we're doing this show is because the audio version of this book is going up for sale.
Yeah, shortly.
So, right.
The print version and the ebook version are already up. I mean, they came out last year in 2015.
Right.
But we recently did, I recently did an audiobook version of it that will be up for sale in about a week or so.
Yeah.
Maybe just a few days from when this podcast goes up.
And it's sold very well. It's got good reviews. And I think it's averaging like 4.5 stars out of 5.
Yeah. And it led to working with Steve Mara and writing some other paranormal books later on because he read it and enjoyed it.
When we released this book, it caught the attention of one parapsychologist in particular that asked Jenny to write a couple of books on cases that he was involved in.
Yeah.
And those are also for sale. And there's he's got a third one that he wants to do about Stockport. The Stockport.
That was actually one case that's I wanted soon. To delve into.
That'll be coming soon. So you can just consider this kind of like a bonus for our fans that have bought Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. We can show you what it looks like now.
Yeah.
What it looks like today.
And you can like I said, you can talk a little bit about your experiences maybe
what happened in each room.
Right.
That kind of stuff.
Because, it's one thing reading it, but then it's one thing hearing the person that saw it talking about,
And at the time that it happened, we only had a Polaroid camera with, what did that carry, 15 shots?
I think back in the day, the Polaroid, that little pack, it only had 7,
Was it only 7?
For some reason, I want to say it was 7.
Yeah. And we only had...
It was some weird number.
So we weren't able to take a whole lot of pictures. But the pictures that survived over the years, the really cool ones, they're in the book of certain things that it did. Okay, well, let's show them what it looks like. Okay.
Okay. Now, for those of you listening to the audio podcast, sorry, you can't see this, but when I put up the YouTube video too, I'm going to.
You can look at it.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the audio podcast. I'll put a link in the description so you can go and. See some of the pictures. Although I have to say this does have the actual address on it.
But it won't on the photos.
Okay.
We copy those photos. They won't get the address.
Okay.
All right. Now what you're looking at is the front of the chateau. All right. And this is how I remembered it when I was there. I think even the colors are the same.
Well, now you guys took a picture of the outside of it from the car because I put that in the book. Now it was hard to tell because it was kind of far away. I think it was blue.
Was it?
But I don't know. It was hard to tell because, like I said, it was snowing and kind of far away. It's actually kind of an olive green now.
Right. Maybe it was blue, but that's just kind of it gives me that impression of looking at it again.
Yeah.
And the snow and everything. Now, if you see the top window there, that is the window that I would talk about in the book when we were in the parking lot in front of this. The parking lot's right there in front of that door. You can't see them because they're covered in snow, but that's a place where you can park.
Yeah.
We looked up there and saw that those shades had been opened and that the lights were on. That's the window that I'm talking about.
Okay.
Now, that front door right there, that's the front door I ran out of after it moved the lamp. And when you go into that front door, immediately on your right is an entrance into another room. And that was the room that I spent the first night in when I heard the telephone receiver pick up.
Okay.
And heard something drag itself across the floor. And
you only slept in there that one night, right?
Just the first night.
Yeah, you should probably talk about that. Like, talk about going up there and talk about...
Well, I'll talk about that when I show you the picture of the room.
Okay.
But that's it. And it... Let's go on to the next photograph.
Okay, what's the next one?
Okay, this is upstairs. And this is the upstairs living room. And behind that couch is that window that you just saw from outside.
From the outside,
the outside. So that's the top floor. We spent most of the time in there on a hide-a-bed.
Yeah.
But the hide-a-bed at this angle would have been kind of behind you and up against the wall. Those couches weren't there. And off to the right, you see the little planter. That's where the staircase comes up.
Okay.
Now that window right there is where the word go was scrawled in wax from the twist tie.
Yeah.
It was that window right there that you see.
Okay.
Now off to your left, that's like a sliding glass door that goes on a little patio, but we didn't go out on it the whole time we were there because at that time it was stacked full of firewood.
Okay.
And it was snow in there. But that's that same little fireplace thing. It's exactly the same.
Oh, interesting.
That was there.
So they haven't moved that.
Uh-uh. That's the exact same original one. And the carpet's new. I hope so,
because they had some ugly-ass carpet back in 1982.
Oh, yeah. Originally, it was like a 70s shag.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Really, really tacky. But that's about it for that photo. What's the next one?
The next one is...
Okay. This is that same upstairs room.
It's the same room, but it's a different angle.
Right. That is the sliding glass door.
Whoops.
Go back to... That's the sliding glass door that goes out to the patio that had the firewood stacked on it. Now, see where the little chair is? That's where the hide-a-bed was.
Okay.
And that... When it was folded up, that's where I was sleeping when the front door chain got knocked off.
Okay.
Remember by the...
Yeah.
Which, that's in the book. But that's where I was sleeping when I heard that front door lock go BAM!
Yeah.
And get torn off. Now, behind that wall is that master bedroom. That's where Lois and Red were sleeping.
Okay.
And that's where Red came from when he ran out and said, what was that?
Okay.
So, yeah. This angle is taken from right when you come up the stairs.
Okay.
Now, if you were to pan right, you'd see the kitchen and the dining room and the hallway that went down to the master bedroom and the bathroom. But that's it. And see that little skylight? Boy, that brings back memories looking at that. That gives me chills. Okay.
Really?
Yeah, it does. Now, in that back corner, used to be hanging from the ceiling was a round lamp on a chain. You know, like those tacky
70s. You guys have a picture of that was taken at the time.
Used to hang, that was hanging right there in that corner from the ceiling.
Yeah.
What's the next one? Yeah, see the next one. Okay. Yeah, here's where this is. Right near that patio door. This is a shot into that room. And the dining room where you see it now is where it was back then. But up against that wall, there was something kind of like shallow bookshelves. That's what I think they were. I think there were bookshelves up against there. But I don't remember there being any books in them. I think there were little decorations. I think we have pictures of those in the book. And see the counter? That countertop was there, although it's a different countertop. Back in those days, it was... like tiles, those little 3 or 4 by 4 inch little tiles.
Yeah.
And that's where Lois saw the glass go.
Moving across.
I didn't see that. She saw it.
She saw that though,
right.
Yeah.
I didn't see that. And then the kitchen is remodeled. It's a lot nicer than it used to be. I think they were just brown wood cabinets. And that's a different stove. But if you see that light on that or on that end table, right there is the hallway that goes back towards the master bedroom and the bathroom.
Okay.
That was the hallway I was walking down, or that was the hallway that Red was walking down when he looked right and saw the rocking chair rocking around flying.
Okay.
I was at the other end of it. Okay, let's go to the next picture. Yeah, that's the dining room. It's remodeled, but that's just another angle of it. We can go on to the next one. Yeah. Kitchen. Yeah, it's definitely, see, that's a single piece of marble counter that's totally remodeled. Yeah, the refrigerator's been moved. It used to be that the refrigerator was right next to the oven. So they changed that.
I mean, not much stuff happened in the kitchen.
No.
Oddly.
I remember that it turned the oven knobs on.
Yeah.
A couple times, but then it only did it a few times.
Yeah, it seemed like most of the activity was centered in other rooms.
I have a feeling that sink's been slightly relocated, but not much happened in there.
Yeah.
And we didn't cook. We weren't, you know, we were eating fast food, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the next one? That is the master bedroom. If you see the doorway there in the corner going on to the into the bathroom, mm-hmm. that wasn't there in my day. That there was no door there.
Okay.
The door was on the other side of that wall. And you could only get to it by going down the hallway. So they remodeled that. That way people in the master bedroom could get to the bathroom without having to go down the hall.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Now, actually, I don't know if there is a second door there at the end of the hallway. Probably. There's probably two doors right there. But that is exactly where the bed was when we were there, when the sheets or when the comforter was pulled off of the bed and the pillows went flying up. And went over my aunt and uncle's head.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at it from this angle, that's what they would have seen. But the pillows would have come up, went right over their heads, and behind them was a closet. But that closet had a top to it. It didn't extend all the way up to the ceiling because it kind of has a vaulted ceiling that was kind of slanted.
Diagonal, yeah.
Kind of diagonal. So there was kind of like a storage space above the closet, and that's where they went. That's where the pillows went. And on the right there is the drapes. It's not the exact same drapes that it used to be. That's where the drapes flew open that time. And that's also the same drapes where I put the folded up hand towel that vanished and went in my back pocket.
Right.
Which that's a great story, and that really freaked us out. And really, from the angle that this is taking, would have been right where the rocking chair was that was rocking back and forth. It was right in that position. And that we have a picture of that rocking chair in the book.
Yeah.
But it's all new furniture, but that's pretty much the location. That's where it was.
It's a lot smaller than I pictured it.
It's a lot smaller than I remembered it. But, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. When you were telling me about it, I pictured a much bigger room.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like the master bedroom... I mean, that was like the center of a lot of the stuff that happened in there.
Yeah. You know, I was 13, so I was smaller than I am now, but I remembered it being bigger.
Yeah. Too.
But yeah, looking at it and go, yeah, I guess it was. It's pretty small. It's just an average size room.
Yeah.
It brings back memories. Even though it looks different, I know what happened in that place.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on to the next one. That's the bathroom. Okay. That's where, see that window?
Yeah.
Used to be on either side of those were some like drapes, but they were lightweight, like you'd see in a bathroom. They were kind of like a little doily material or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's where I saw what looked like handprints wiped, like somebody had wiped greasy hands on the
curtains.
On the little curtains next to that. And that bathroom back there, that's where Lois was showering, and when she got out, she saw that the toilet paper had been taken off of the roll, or, you know what I mean, strewn. You know how, like, you pull a sheet of toilet paper off?
Yeah.
It was like a sheet of toilet paper, big, long sheet of it was pulled off of the roll, and it got wrapped around the handle to the outside of the shower door.
What?
Yeah, she found it like that while she was showering, and the door was closed. That inner door was closed when that happened. No, nobody opened it.
Holy shit.
Yeah. She said that really scared her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it just happened while she was taking a shower, and then that sliding glass door is glass.
Yeah.
And no one went in there. And you couldn't do it to yourself because the door was shut. You couldn't reach over there and pull that toilet paper
and then pull
it and wrap it around there. That was spooky. I didn't see that, of course. She just called out to Red when she was coming out, and he saw it, and I went over there and said, "What happened?" And Red said, "Oh man, look what it did to the toilet paper. You know, Lois is wrapped in a towel." I was like, "Wow,
That's pretty freaky.
Yeah, that one really...
Honestly, I don't remember, because I don't think I put that in the book, because I don't remember her telling me that at the time.
There was so much stuff, happened that we can't even remember it
and
all.
And like, yeah, inevitably, I think you seeing
well, we these said that in photos, the book. Yeah. We said that in the book, that there was so much stuff that happened that we can't remember it all. Yeah. It was just a constant barrage of it.
Yeah.
Something would move once every 15 minutes at least. Sometimes a bunch of stuff would move in a little short period of time.
Yeah.
But there's more detail in the book. But looking at these old photos kind of brings back memories of certain...
That's what I mean. That might be jogging something loose because I don't remember her... I remember her telling me that she was in the shower once and she came out and like there were these like washcloths or towels like folded in weird places or like hung over the knobs and stuff and no one had been in there. They hadn't been there before. But I don't remember her telling me that the toilet paper wrapped itself around the fucking...
I remember that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it did the same kind of things over and over and over again. And it was all nonsensical. And there was no attempt at communication, which we kind of get into that in the book when that kind of fits a pattern of classic poltergeist activity.
Yeah, just kind of like meaningless random stuff.
Yeah, there's no attempt to communicate.
Not really. Except for that one word it wrote.
Yeah, but that's not true. That's like signaling and teasing. It's no extended conversations, nothing like that.
Yeah.
Okay. This room is the room that I spent the night in for the very first night. It's just that it's been changed. They put bunk beds in it. Okay. Where you see the TV and that one bunk bed right there, that would have been the head of the bed was up against that I slept in. And all, in that corner over there is where the nightstand would have been where the telephone was sitting. This shot is taken from the corner right next to the sliding doors to the dresser, where I heard the coat hangers rattle. But that's where I spent the first night. That room is pretty weird. I don't reckon, of course the decor is totally different. None of that was in there. And I think the walls were just white. But I just remember the angles. That's the only place where that could be.
Yeah.
It's that first room on the right, on the ground floor. So that's where I spent the first night. That's when I realized that something was wrong, which I get into in the book. Let's go on to the next one. Yeah, it's from another angle. Okay. That window is what I would have been facing when I was laying in bed, basically. This is right from the doorway when you walk in. And to your right, you would, if you'd pan over a little bit, you'd see where the closet was. In those days, it was just like a long, low dresser, like one of those little four-drawer dressers was up against that window, but nothing real remarkable. Let's go on to the next one. That's one of the downstairs bathrooms. And I think there were two of them side by side. Other than that, I don't remember much about that. We can go to the next one. Nothing really happened in there. This is that last room on the right where Wesley was sleeping on the first night. And I think he slept there on the second and third night too.
And I kind of mentioned that in the book too, but Wesley, your cousin, he did not seem particularly bothered by the poltergeist activity.
He wasn't really aware what was going on because things would happen so fast, His spatial awareness, he was slightly autistic. His spatial awareness wasn't like what everybody else's was. Like, it's normal for us to know when someone walks into a room and moves an object behind you and leaves, but not to a deaf and autistic person. People could come in behind him and move something and then walk out and he'd never know. And so he grew up finding objects moved.
Right. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So if he'd find objects moved around, he just assumed that we did it.
Right.
And we would try to explain to him what was going on and he was just kind of incredulous. Although he did seem creeped out in that house. I think it was some of it was denial.
And later, I have to say, he would deny it later on.
Yes, he did. He denied. He said that we made it up.
Yeah. But when he found out that I was writing a book about it.
Then he wanted to talk about it.
Then he wanted to talk about it. And he did write me a short
story.
Short thing about a couple of things that he had seen.
Yeah.
He said he didn't like to talk about it.
Right. He thought it had something to do with black magic and witchcraft type of a deal.
Oh, really?
That's what he told me one time. He thought that there was some sorcerer that lived there. But, you know, he's got an imagination. You know, he's deaf and he's quite religious. But there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence that a sorcerer ever lived there. This is what he thought, because he thought the place was creepy. And the drafting table in the other room, that kind of, he didn't like that. He thought that was weird. He thought that had something to do with witchcraft. And that drafting table would have been on the other side of that wall. Up where the head of that bed is. It's in that. Okay. It's in the room
on the other side of that wall. Because there were three bedrooms on the ground floor, right? Yeah. And then the master bedroom was on the
other side of that wall. Is the room where it first confronted us by moving the lamp.
Let's see if they have a picture. They have a picture of that. This is the same room.
That's that same room. Yeah, that's the room that Wes was in. Of course, it looks totally different now.
Yeah,
That's another one of the bathrooms. Okay, that.
That's probably
That's the room. Yeah. That's the room where the lamp moved. Now, it had a bunk bed back in those days also, but it's not the same one. The original bunk bed looked like it was made out of huge tree trunks.
And it was very heavy also.
And it was in that corner.
Yeah.
But it wasn't along that side of the wall. It was on the other wall up against that window.
Okay.
That's where it was. And then at the, I guess you could say the head of it, at the head of that bed, was that little dresser with a lamp on it, almost where that dresser with the lamp on it is at now. It's just that, you know, if you just slide that over about another 4 feet, that's where the other dresser was.
Okay.
You understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And then if you were to keep going, panning right, up against that wall was that drafting table. Now, if you were to pan left, there was, along that wall there, you'll eventually hit another closet in that wall. That's the way I can explain it. And that's where it tried to put the lamp inside that closet. And
Tell the lamp story. Because that the lamp story was like the first definitive thing. Because you guys had been experiencing weird shit since you got there. Kind of like little things, little creepy things, creepy feelings.
Yeah. Well,
That was the first thing that everyone saw at one time.
Lamp. All right. What happened with the lamp? We all went out to the ski slopes. But my Uncle Red and I, we actually didn't want to ski. We didn't even want to learn how to ski. We didn't care about it. And I was kind of wigged out from some stuff that had happened the night before, which I get into in the book. And I can't remember exactly. We were in the car. My Uncle Red was like, let's drive around for a little bit. We'll let Lois ski.
Yeah.
So my uncle and I are driving around, and I said, Red, do you believe in haunted houses? And he's like, well, you know, why are you asking me this? You know, make a long story short, he's like, okay, we'll go back and check it out. So we go back to the chateau. And when we get there, we find all these folded hand towels at the foot of the bed. Some of them are on backs of doors. And we were just mystified. We're like, is this room service or something? But it was just where the hand towels were. And how they were folded is not the way a maid would do it.
They left them like hanging on doorknobs.
Doorknobs, the back of doorknobs.
Over the backs of chairs and things like that. Like just in weird places.
Well, in this room you're looking at now, there was a drafting table. And the drafting table had a stool on it. And the stool had a back. And on the backrest of that stool was a hand towel folded over it. And it was folded over in 1/3. You know, you fold it 3 times and then you put it over the back. And my uncle just points at it and he's going, what is this? You know, who does this? I said, I don't know. Well, my uncle then grabbed that stool and pushed it in because it was pulled out a bit. He pushed it in and he says, okay, let's get out of here. And we go back to get Lois, and my uncle's like, hey, don't tell Lois about this. She'll you know, freak out, and let's not panic her or anything. She'll, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it says, okay. So we pick up Lois, and the first thing you do, I'm 13, I start blabbing about the ghosts. You know, I let the cat right out of the bag. So we, Lois is like, yeah, that's weird. That place is kind of creepy. Let's go check it out, you know. So when we get back, we take her right to that room right there and show her that hand towel that was on the back of that stool. And she's going, yeah, that's weird, you know. And I said, Red, look at that chair, man. That's pulled back out again. You pushed that in. And he said, yeah, yeah, I did push that in, didn't I? And I said, yeah, I remember you pushing that thing in. And it's pulled out a good 8 inches, 9 inches now. And Red was like, yeah, that's weird, man. Somebody must be in here. So we all start backing out of that room. And Red shuts it, shuts the door to that room. And we walk a few steps down that hallway. And Red went, hold on, wait a minute. Let's go back and memorize that. You know what? I forgot to tell Lois's comment. I always do this. Lois made a comment while we were in that room. She goes, boy, that is an ugly lamp.
Okay. Yeah.
And then we left. We get down the hallway. Red goes, hold on. Let's go back and check this room. Let's go memorize that room again, just in case something moves. So he goes and opens the door. And I heard everybody gasp. And I look to see what they're looking at. And the lamp's gone. It was gone. And we had just shut that door 3 seconds ago. Well, I screamed and ran out the hallway and ran out that front door. And huff and puff for a little bit, tried to catch my breath. And I'm looking back down the hallway and I just see him in there, you know, playing his day, talking to each other, looking inside that room. And I said, well, I guess there's no danger. And I ran back in to look at the aftermath again. And they're just sitting there in the doorway marveling because the lamp is gone and it's almost in that closet. And the cord is trailing across the floor in the direction of where the lamp used to be, because that's where the plug was. So it's like it grabbed it, picked it up, tried to run with it about a good 10, 15 feet with the cord trailing behind it. And it was absolutely silent, and it was fast. It was fast.
Yeah, you said you had walked maybe a couple paces the hall.
And there was only one doorway in and out of that room.
And I mean, if someone was in there, you would have heard them moving it.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't walk around without, you know. Well, my uncle goes, no, no way, no way. There's got to be somebody in here. So he checks that window that you see right there, and it was plasticated from the inside, and all the plastic was still intact. And there's no other doors in or out of there. So then he starts getting on his hands and knees and starts pulling up the carpet around where it meets the walls, looking to see if there's a hidden door, a trap door.
Yeah.
Because he's going, is there something underneath this house? Is there a basement? Was there a way to get up here? There's nothing. It was weird.
Because we have to say that for a long time, I mean, Red was a very, you know, a practical guy, I guess.
You don't want to accept there's something invisible in the house.
Right. So for a long time, he was trying to convince, well, there's somebody in here.
Yeah.
Like somebody's sneaking around.
Yeah. And I must admit, I did feel a presence, you know. It felt like something bearing down on you. But no human presence. I mean, there was a human takes up room. They take up space.
Yeah.
And when they walk, they make noise. They have to have a place to hide or to go to. And this is happening in rooms where there's no places to hide. No places to go.
And you guys were in there almost constantly for the entire week. I mean, you didn't really leave that much. So it's like you would have seen somebody.
No, it was quite an ordeal.
Messing around.
And, well, as soon as I saw the lamp move, you know, that was my proof. That was all I needed to see. I knew that at the time I was saying it's a ghost.
Yeah.
Now as time went on, I no longer believe it was a ghost. And towards the end of this whole episode, I started to think it was something other than a ghost. We get into that in the book. And what it was a poltergeist. And in the book, we use a lot of stuff that came from other studies through parapsychologies over the decades to explain what a poltergeist is. And a poltergeist is RSPK, recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis. So it's usually subconscious psychokinesis, which we can get into that later. But anyway, it was a very, very impressive phenomenon. Very scary. Okay, let's go on to the next photo.
Okay, well, actually, what we should do first, because we're right at 34 minutes, so let's pause for a break real quick, and then we'll come back and pick it back up.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
I would like to take a second and thank Subculture Corsets and Clothing for sponsoring Project iRadio and my show. While listening to my podcast, please take a second and visit their website at www.subculturecorsets.com. They carry a wide selection of corsets, rockabilly, gothic, steampunk, and pinup clothing, shoes, and accessories. Again, their website is subculturecorsets.com, or if you're in the Jacksonville, Florida area, stop by their store in the Avenues Mall. And if you like to save money, use the discount code 13 o'clock when checking out and save 10% off your entire order. By the way, if you're a curvy girl, Subculture did not forget about you. They carry size 4 to 4X, and guys, they have men's clothing and shoes as well. So go shop at subculturecorsets.com now and use the discount code 13O'Clock for a 10% discount. Okay, and we're back.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, yeah, it's stressful you talking about this. Yeah.
Yeah. I know, it's like, I always like to talk because it's really interesting, and I think people think it's interesting. I think it's interesting, but you do kind of get all
Yeah, I get wound up talking about this. Okay, this is that same room. Where that television is, that's where that drafting table was. Where that lamp is right now, that's about where that lamp was. That
where moved. The ugly lamp was.
Right, but it didn't look like, it wasn't that same lamp. It was uglier.
The one in this picture is pretty ugly, too.
This other one was hideous.
Well, it was the 70s. Well, it was 82, but you know.
Yeah, that lamp probably was from the 70s. It was old then.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the next photograph? Yeah, we're back up in the main living room.
Yeah, that's just the main living room.
Now, in the book, we have a... Go back to that. In the book, we have a photograph of that exact room from that angle. I think we have a picture of Lois right near those stairs.
Yeah, it's like a picture of Lois's back going down the stairs.
Yeah, and I think my jacket is over that railing right there.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's the exact same railing, but it is in the exact same spot.
Yeah. And the lamp that used to hang, it's a different lamp now, but the lamp that used to hang over the staircase, they saw that swing around a bunch of times.
Right where you see that chandelier hanging from the ceiling and that stair down going down that staircase, there was one like that back then, but I think it was just a round ball.
Yeah, it was,
the round ball. We have a picture of that also. And Lois said that she remembered it swinging back and forth a good,
2 feet, she said.
2 feet? I don't remember it swinging that far. I remember it swinging more like 6 inches each way.
Yeah. Like swinging or going around in a circle?
Circle, yeah. Kind of an orbital kind of a thing. And it wasn't constant. It was just every now and then you'd see it swinging.
Yeah.
And sometimes it would be still and you're watching it. You go, is that thing moving? And it seemed like it would slowly accelerate. Maybe it would move up a little. Maybe it would speed up a little bit, swinging back and forth or rotating. And then it seemed like it would stop. It was just unpredictable. It's just unpredictable.
And like I said, we should reiterate that we called the case the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. And that was where the phenomena began.
Yeah.
Which was kind of weird because it sort of started at random. I mean, you had never experienced anything like that before, right?
Yeah.
And you guys had never been to this place before. No. It was like a vacation condo.
Yeah, never been there.
And you had never been there before. But for whatever reason...
I had a feeling on the way up there, though, that something bad was going to happen when we were driving up there. And I talk about that in the book. Something did happen on the way up. The hood flew open.
Yeah. The hood of the Jeep Wagoneer.
But we discounted it. It must have been some kind of an error. Even though Red went out there and checked the latch, he couldn't figure out why it flew up. But it did fly up. It scared me.
Yeah.
I jumped out of my skin when it flew up. We weren't going fast. Maybe about 50.
Yeah.
It was snowing. Then we were on a mountain road. Anyway, this is just where it started. We were in there for about a week. And we left here. We left there and went to my aunt's house. And it started up over there, too, and went on for about another week. And it actually did better stuff at my aunt's house.
You should probably talk about a couple of those.
I can talk about some. It did better stuff at my aunt's house. It's just that...
It did creepier stuff at your aunt's house.
Yeah. It's just that it didn't impress you as much because we had been living with it for a week already.
Yeah, because... And I think both Lois and Red said this. Mm-hmm. They said even at the time, you know, you guys were in this vacation condo. All this crazy shit was going on.
Yeah, we didn't know anybody there. We couldn't tell anybody. We just called people on the phone.
And the roads were closed, too. Yeah. Like, you could, for some of your stay. So it's not like you could just, we're getting the fuck out of here. You couldn't really go anywhere.
We could leave the condo.
Yeah.
And we could go get something to eat. But the road from the resort down...
To the main road.
Down to the main roads were closed.
Were closed, yeah. Right. It was just like The Shining.
Yeah. But at my aunt's house, it did even better stuff. It's just that, you know.
Y'all were kind of sick of it by now. Or not sick of it, but like inured to it almost.
Yeah, your tolerance for it goes up. And then we had more witnesses. You know, the neighbors would come over and watch it. This was, you know, early 80s. The paranormal was not a much discussed topic then. There was no such thing as, of course, the internet. You didn't have paranormal shows. The closest thing you had was like maybe In Search Of.
In Search Of, yeah.
And you just didn't call the police for shit like that. If you called the police for something like that, you say, there's something in the house that's moved. They just send a damn wagon with guys with white coats. They take you out of there. You know.
Well, yeah. And you guys, at the time, you didn't tell anybody.
No, we kept it. It was almost kind of like a family secret for a long time that happened. But the neighbors, at Lois's neighbors saw it.
Yeah.
My mom didn't want me talking about it afterwards. It was weird.
Yeah.
It was traumatic. It was a traumatic experience. It was, you know, and when you're being traumatized by something that is fucking invisible and something that's not supposed to exist.
And something that you have no way of predicting what it's going to do.
No.
Because like I said, now some of the stuff that it did, I mean, some of the stuff that it did at Mammoth Mountain was kind of threatening.
Yeah.
Some of it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of it was just kind of random.
Yeah. And it would back off if you had too much.
Yeah.
If it looked like you were going to break and run, or if you did break and run, it would kind of ease up on you. It would stop moving things for a while. And then the next thing it would move would be something small. And then it would slowly build up and build up and build up. And then it would do something that impressed you so bad. You go, you know, I got to get out of here, you know. But it's in the book.
Because it seems like at Lois's house, mm-hmm. it did also like creepier things and also like more impressive things. I'm thinking particularly of the time when it was doing the thing with the socks on your sleeping bag and when it tried to talk, quote unquote.
Yeah. Yeah, it did try to talk. I couldn't understand it. That's kind of making me uncomfortable thinking about that. Yeah, it tried to, well, I was laying in a cot because I was a guest at my aunt's house. So they would just put out a cot for me and I'd put a sleeping bag on it. I was in that sleeping bag and in the corner of the room, stuff had been happening all day. In the corner of the room, I heard something sounded like a water bubble, you know, like those drinking water, big drinking water bottles that you have at the office where you
get,
and you hear bloonk.
Yeah.
That's what it sounded like. It came from the corner of the room. And I thought, well, that must be bubbles in water pipes or something. And then it did it again. Bloonk. So I rose my head up and looked in that direction. Bloonk. And the bubble sound started to form into a tone of a human voice. But it sounded aquatic. And it was just gibberish and kind of sounded like it was backwards. And I jumped up, bolted, and ran, dragging the sleeping bag behind me. Left my cousin in there. It didn't bother him. He couldn't hear it. He was asleep anyway. By the time this had happened, I pretty much knew that this thing wouldn't hurt you. It could hurt you. It was strong enough to hurt you, but I knew it wouldn't. Because it would have already.
Right. Because the thing is, at Mammoth Mountain, it had no problem at all moving a 300-pound bunk bed up against a door so you couldn't get in the room.
Right. It touched Lois. She felt it. You know, we'll talk about that in the book. And trying to think what else. Red had reminded me of a lot of things that it did with the Matchbox cars.
Yeah.
We can save that for the book. But when he brought it back up, when he mentioned it, you know, I was like, oh yeah, I do remember that happening. That was weird. But so many weird things had happened that you kind of, eventually you get to the point where you're like, oh, well, so what? You know what I mean? That's the thing.
You can kind of get used to anything, really.
Yeah. I was mostly just waiting for really big stuff to happen.
Right.
The little stuff, you kind of ignore it. Another big thing that it did is it threw that kitchen knife. It threw a kitchen. I was sitting on a couch, and my uncle was sitting on another couch. My aunt was behind us, and a kitchen knife flew out of the kitchen, probably 6 feet off the ground. It was point forward. It wasn't rolling. It was just shot like it was shot from a gun. It was moving extremely straight, just in a straight line. It went over my uncle's head, went out in front of me, but I didn't see it. Went right up to the sliding glass door, stopped, and then fell straight down into the ground and just hit the ground with a thud, boom, like that. And that's the only part I saw. I was looking down pretty much at my feet. And I just heard, dunk, and looked forward, and there, the knife was sitting right there in front of me on its side. And I just heard my uncle react, "Did you see that?" And I said, "Yeah, it hit right there." And he goes, "No, it came from behind me." It came, and then Lois said, "No, it came from the kitchen because it passed her."
Yeah, because she had just put it in there.
Yeah. And it I didn't see it fly through the air, but they did. They said it went in a straight line, went right to the glass door, stopped, and then was shot straight down to the ground in a single stroke, like it just made an L-shaped pattern. It pulled its punch at the last minute, right before it got to the glass. I would have liked to have seen it, but I wasn't looking in the right direction. I just saw it hit. Boom!
Which is kind of another thing.
And it didn't bounce when it hit. Boom!
Which kind of reminds me of, like, we'll probably get into this in a few minutes, but yeah. How it kind of started back up again at our house.
Yeah, we had some of our friends see it. It did something like that.
We should probably go into that in the last part of the show.
Yeah, well, we're at 45 minutes. You probably have time to tell that story.
Yeah. Right. Well, the first thing we're going to do, because I'm going to take another really, okay, really short break, just 20 seconds, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about how the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist returned after 30, however many years, 35 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, it came back kind of weak, though.
Yeah.
But it did come back.
But it did come back, and I actually got to see it this time.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll be right back.
There are terrors, real and imaginary, and I write about them all. Paranormal nonfiction, horror fiction, the Rochdale House Poltergeist, the Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, the Associated Full Monsters, Red Menace, the Five Tenebrous Poisons, Bellwether. Go to www.jennyashford.com or search Amazon for the Jenny Ashford author page.
Okay, we're back. Now, we have some kind of theories about maybe why this happened, but, you know, Tom had gone through this experience many years ago. He had, like, another kind of related experience in the early 90s.
Yeah, we covered that in the book.
Huh? And then since, but nothing weird had really happened up until then. Now, after we wrote The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, and then we were working on another book with Steve Mara, Rochdale Poltergeist.
Was it Rochdale or Fire and Whispers?
It was Rochdale.
Rochdale.
And so we were talking about poltergeists pretty much all the time. And we went on podcasts talking about
we've done a lot of Mammoth Mountain
and stuff.
We've done a lot of shows on Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist.
So we kind of think that maybe us talking about it so much and, like, being so, you know, immersed in poltergeist phenomena, maybe kind of made it make a little bit of a return appearance.
Yeah.
Because
you said you wanted to see it, and I said, yeah, I wish you would have seen it. You would have loved it. It was awesome.
Yeah, because I had never, I mean, because like I said, at the beginning of the show, I had always been a paranormal skeptic. I'd never seen any ghosts. I never saw any poltergeist, anything. I never saw anything like that. And I never believed it. I mean, I believed your story because, you know.
Because you have to.
Because I have to. No, because I know you wouldn't.
Because I'm your boyfriend.
Because I know you wouldn't make anything like that up.
I got a weird family, but I'll tell you what. They saw that shit too.
That's what I mean.
You talked to them, yeah.
And they saw it too. Yeah. And they told me the same thing that you told me without any coaching from you.
Yeah.
So I'd always been kind of disappointed. I'm like, man, I would have been scared, I think. But
yeah, you would have been scared for a while at least.
Yeah. But so maybe me wanting that kind of made it. Now, it was nothing like to the level that you guys described. Basically, now the first thing that happened, I wasn't here for that.
Yeah.
What ended up happening? Your mom was here.
Yeah.
A couple of her friends were here.
Yeah. And I got into an argument with
her. You got into an argument with your mom. And you got mad and you went into our bedroom.
Yeah.
Right?
And they were out in the living room and all I heard was crash. And it was loud. And I ran out there to find them looking in the kitchen, looking at the molding that was above the kitchen cabinets had been pulled off and the statues of the horses were thrown on the floor. And the molding was pulled out by the nails. They weren't looking at it when it happened. Their back was to it. They said it just happened in one strike. Boom. And I tried to rationalize it. There's a vent right above that molding where the air conditioner blows down. And I just said, well, maybe it got moist somehow and cold air on it somehow warped it. But I knew I was lying.
I mean, that's been there.
That's not going to pull nails out.
No. Those horses and that molding has been there since we've moved in here, like 5 years ago or whatever it was, 4 years ago.
And then you're never really looking at it when it happens, but they were in the same room, but their backs were to it. Yeah. That was the first thing that happened. And then the next day we had guests over.
Or it was 2 days later.
2 days later? Okay.
Yeah. 2 days later.
You can tell them what happened. You can tell from your point of view.
Because the first thing, I wasn't home. I was at work.
Yeah.
And he just told me about it later. Now, you didn't really consider it necessarily paranormal until...
I wasn't totally convinced.
Right. But then a couple days later, two of our friends came over one evening and we were going to watch a movie. So we had DirecTV at the time. We don't have it anymore.
We were going to order Mad Max.
We were going to order Mad Max Fury Road.
And I already seen it, man. I love that movie.
We'd already seen it like six times.
Yeah.
That is such a rad movie. But they hadn't seen it. So I'm like, well, you guys want to say, I'll watch it a seventh time. I don't care. So we're trying to get it on pay-per-view. And we couldn't get it to work, and it was a big pain in the ass or whatever, and we were kind of getting frustrated. And Tom's mom was like, well, I'll call customer service and see if they can get him to get it started or whatever. So she's on the phone with customer service. I'm sitting on one couch with Tom. Our friends are sitting on the other couch that's, like, perpendicular. Now, like, in front of us, there's, like, a glass coffee table, and there are three remote controls on it. Now, all of us are just sitting there. Tom's mom is on the phone. All of a sudden... the DirecTV remote that was in the middle of the coffee table flew off the coffee table. And it went about 2 feet, 2.5 feet. And then it landed on the carpet with this really loud thud.
Yeah.
It was just too loud. It didn't bounce either.
Boom!
It sounded like it was full of lead or like it was a brick or something.
Yeah.
Or like the floor was magnetic and it like sucked it into it. And then like for a second, everyone just kind of sat there like stunned.
I was in a daze. I saw it happen, but I was unmoved.
Like I looked at our friends on the couch and I was like, did you guys just see that? And they're like looking at me with these huge, with their big eyes, like dinner plates like that. And they're like, yeah, they're like, that just flew off of there.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's what I thought. Yeah. Nobody kicked the table. Nobody touched the table. And then immediately I turned to Tom and asked, did you do that?
Yeah. And I was just kind of in a daze. Like I looked at it and went, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
And I stood up. I stood up after you said that. And I walked over towards it and looked at it. And I looked on the ground where my feet were, and there was a stack of coins.
Yeah.
And then Dimitri said, Tom, do it again. Because he read our book.
Yeah, because he read the book.
Do it again.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt all the hairs standing up on the back of my neck. And for a second, I thought Poltergeist was going to come back. And I went, no, it's not coming back. It's not coming back. And it subsided.
Yeah, you had to kind of tone that shit down.
Yeah. And then it just kind of came back for a little while. It did some stuff after that.
It did a few minor things.
They wanted me to do it again, and I can't do it. It does it subconsciously. I can't control it.
That's what I mean. I don't think you...
Yeah.
Basically, all it does now... Well, now it still turns the TV on every now and then, but the TV comes on by itself.
It opened the back door while it was locked. The deadbolt was still in.
Yeah, that
the cat saw that one.
That was pretty funny. Yeah, you have to say, like, our house, it's like there's the front door, and, like, right across from it, there's, like, a little foyer, whatever. And then there's, like, double doors that lead out to the back patio. Now, we never open those doors.
No.
We don't, because we have a door to the back patio in our bedroom. We always use that one. We don't ever go through those doors. They're always locked and deadbolted. And one morning... Tom woke up and went out. It was like, what was it, 8:39?
You went to work.
Yeah.
I got up and walked out right after you did, maybe a half hour.
Yeah. So like 8:30 probably.
Yeah. And I walked out in the living room and looked and the back doors were open. Just one of them, even though it's a double door.
Yeah.
One of the doors was open and the deadbolt was still.
Was still sticking
engaged.
Out.
No way that could happen. And the cat was sitting there just looking at it.
Like, what the fuck is this all about?
And she knew that was wrong. And she would normally go outside, but she wasn't outside. She was just sitting there staring at that door. You know, that isn't right.
Yeah.
Because she loves that door. She asks us to open that door because we never open it.
Yeah, because we never open it.
She knows it's there. She's like, open this door.
Yeah. She's like, why you guys never use this door? Yeah, come on.
She likes to go out of doors all the time. She loves doors.
She's like Portal Kitty. She likes to like go in and out. Yeah. She'll go out one door and then she wants to come back in. But no, I have to come in this door.
So that door was open. Then the other night, you woke up, you hear the doorbell ring.
The doorbell was ringing.
Yeah, and I checked it. I said, are you asleep? At 4 a.m. Yeah, I said, you sure you didn't dream that? You were like...
No, I was wide awake.
Yeah. Well, I walked out there.
Well, because I heard it ring. Like, I woke up, because I, you know, when I worked outside of the home, I usually would wake up about 4 or 5 in the morning, like, thinking it was time for me to get up. I don't know why I did that. But, so, I think it was 4:25, I remember. Mm-hmm. Because I looked at my phone and I'm like, why the fuck did I wake up at 4:25? Whatever. I need to go back to sleep. And then I'm laying there and the doorbell rang. And I wigged out because who the fuck rings somebody's doorbell?
Yeah.
I mean, the first thing I thought was, oh my God, did somebody run over the cat? I'm like, no, she's inside.
It scared me. You woke me up out of a dead
sleep. Well, I wasn't going to because at first I said, I heard it ring and I'm like, oh shit. Yeah. And then like I was really still and I sat up and I listened and I didn't hear anybody.
Yeah.
And then I said, maybe I imagined it. Like, I know I didn't, but I was like, maybe I imagined it. But then it rang again.
Yeah.
And then I woke you up. I was like, dude, somebody's at the door. And then we, like, he gets his gun and he goes out there and he's like, and all this other stuff. And there was no one there.
No. And we live in a gated community.
Yeah.
A lot of security. So
there was no one there.
No. And then that was weird, though. I was kind of scared to look out that door. You never know what's
out
there.
I was too. I didn't want to go out there.
And then the other one that happened recently, that all happened within a few weeks. And another thing that happened that you forgot is that you were putting on makeup and I went to go change the DVD. And as I walked towards the DVD player, the DVD door opened up.
Yeah, the little tray opened.
Yeah, it opened up as I was walking towards
like it. Like it was preparing. Yeah, put something in here.
And then another thing happened while I was playing a video game. You were at work. I saw that measuring cup that was up on the shelves.
Yeah.
Fall through those two shelves and hit the bottom. And when it hit that bottom shelf, it landed on its base and went and vibrated. And I saw it happen out of the corner of my eye because I was looking at the screen. But I heard it hit. And when I turned and looked, I saw it come down like a streak, straight down. I don't know how it went straight down through all
the
shelves.
It would have had to go through the wooden shelves to go down.
It went straight down and hit in the center of the bottom shelf. And it hit and went, and I could sat there and watched it vibrate back and forth. And what was weird is when it first happened, it was like a wind blew through the house. And you know where I'm talking about. A wind never blows through there. But I sensed a disturbance like a wind blowing across that. And it pushed those shades in.
Yeah.
When there was... It didn't scare me, though. It didn't scare me. I said, man, that was weird. You know, it did it again.
Yeah.
Didn't scare me that time, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't scare me anymore.
Well, the doorbell scared me because it was the middle of the
night.
Yeah,
I thought that might have been a person, though.
That's what I mean. That's why I was scared. Like, after I was like, oh, well, no one's there.
And then the garage door opened up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, the garage door did that, too.
Yeah. And that's it, though. That was all recent stuff. Really, the book focuses on the stuff that happened back then.
Yeah.
And what happened recently, how long ago was that?
It was a few months ago.
A few months ago? Okay. That was child's play compared to what it was when I was 13.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When I was 13, it was a lot better. You would have loved it.
I know. I'm sorry. I missed it.
Yeah, you would have loved it. It was awesome.
One of these days.
It wasn't awesome at the time.
Well, no. Yeah, it wasn't awesome probably, y'all were scared. Y'all were scared, scared shitless.
Yeah, but looking back on it, I'm glad that happened. Because now I know there are certain things that science can't explain yet, I think.
I think they will.
There is some...
They'll figure it out.
There are some theories, which we cover them in the book.
But no, I mean, we're kind of making that clear. You don't think it's supernatural. I don't think it's supernatural.
No, I think it's exotic physics.
Yeah.
Having something to do with, what do they call it? Non-local consciousness.
Yeah.
Stuart Hameroff stuff.
Yeah.
And kind of a quantum soul theory.
Yeah.
That's what he called it.
And basically, I mean... We're operating under the assumption that it's you doing it, but unconsciously.
Yeah, it's not the conscious me. It's the
That's why. It's the subconscious that's why when me. I saw that remote control fly, it didn't scare me. Like it startled me.
Well.
But I immediately turned to you and said, "Did you do that?"
A ghost is a spirit of the dead. A poltergeist is the spirit of the living.
Yeah,
but it's not. But your consciousness is not your spirit. All right. Your spirit. The Gnostics called it the daemon.
Yeah.
It's like the super ego.
Yeah.
The over you. It's the unconsciousness. And your unconscious is a lot more powerful than your consciousness. Your unconscious is actually in charge of your consciousness.
Yeah.
Your consciousness is not in charge of your consciousness. So some people might put it in a different terminology. You know, if they were Christian, they might want to call it their guardian angel, or, you know, or maybe if you think it's the devil, you might call it, say, you know, say demonic possession, you know, but maybe you just have a demonic soul. I don't know. But I don't think it's something that you could learn to control. I don't think so.
I don't feel like, well, I feel like if somebody did, you would know about it.
Maybe ultra advanced aliens can, or something like that. But
one day they'll visit us and tell us how that goes.
I'll tell you one thing, based on what I saw when I was a kid back when I was 13, all the things that it can do and all the physics that it can violate. If you could figure out how to do it by technological means, you'd be technologically superior.
Yeah.
You'd be able to bend the fabric of space-time without using any energy. Well,
because it could teleport things.
Yeah. See, that's the thing.
Instant teleportation.
Yeah. The movement of these objects, you know, would be objects from downstairs appearing upstairs without having gone through stairwells and things like that. So it either penetrated.
It's like instantaneous.
Instantaneous. So it either penetrated through solid matter, or it just kind of wormholed its way over. And you can't wormhole even a tiny object without a whole bunch of energy with using, you know, the physics that we know today. I don't think there was any energy involved in this. It's maybe some kind of weird quantum, I don't know. When I say quantum, I mean, even quantum physicists don't know much about quantum physics. So, you know, I think that's just kind of a catch-all.
That's what I mean. I think it's kind of a wide open field at this point. I mean, you know, we don't know what kind of weird shit.
There's a way to cheat. Let's just put it that way. There's a way to cheat. And consciousness has something to do with it.
Yeah.
That's all I can say about it, unless you want me to answer questions. You want to wrap.
Anyway, no, we're actually over the hour point, so we probably should wrap. This actually went really fast.
It did. If you,
because we talk about this a lot, because, you know.
Yeah, and we've done a lot of other podcasts, a lot of other shows on Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. If you guys want to listen to those, you know, I think Where Did the Road Go did one, End of Days Radio. We've been on a lot of shows.
Yeah. And I mean, actually, if you go on my website, which is just jennyashford.com.
There's links to
There's a page called Media Appearances, and it has links to all the radio shows. Some of them are just me. Some of them are me and him. Some of them are me and Steve Mara about talking about a couple of other poltergeist cases.
But the audio book, Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist, is going to be going... probably be up by the time the video's up.
I don't see why not.
And if you don't feel like reading the book, you should listen to the audiobook. How long is it?
About three hours.
About 3 hours. Yeah, it's a real interesting
hours,
three read.
And a half hours. Yeah.
Jenny did a really good job on it.
Aw, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess
it's actually our bestseller, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that and Rochdale.
That and Rochdale.
Now, Rochdale is, that's like I said, that's a British case, because Steve Mara is a British parapsychologist. So I did one with him too. Now, the audiobook of that is already available. But
And you have at least two more Poltergeist books coming soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you like the paranormal,
yeah,
you know, lots more stuff in store coming from me, other than the stuff that's already up.
Yeah. I still want to do a Bigfoot book. No.
Can we do Skunk Ape instead?
We can do the Florida Skunk Ape. I don't believe there is a Florida Skunk Ape, though.
You're the Florida Skunk Ape.
Yeah.
We already discussed
that.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's true, you guys. Yeah. The Skunk Ape exists, and he's sitting right here.
It depends on what I ate.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. We gotta go.
All right. We're gonna wrap this up. So, as I say at the end of every episode, if you like our show, subscribe to our channel, follow our Twitter, 13 O'Clock Podcast, and like our Facebook page, which is also called 13 O'Clock, O'Clock Podcast.
13 O'Clock?
Oh my God. That was a Freudian slip. I guess I did, didn't I?
13. Wrap it up.
All right. Okay, so I hope you like the show, and we'll see you next week. Bye.